The owner of the Houston Astros, Jim Crane, is joining us this morning here on ESPN 97.5. I knew you'd be a little bit early, so we appreciate you getting here. We're going to talk with him. If you've got any questions, you can either tweet us at John Granato, at Lance Zierlein, or you can call 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776. Talking Astros baseball now for the next hour here on ESPN 97.5. Look at that. That's a good intern right there, isn't it? He brought Mr. Crane his coffee. Get it going on, and welcome to the show. We appreciate you being here.
Good morning. Nice to be here. A little cold.
Yeah, it's too cold to play baseball now, but going down to Florida in less than a month now, this has been your shortest offseason, which is nice.
Well, it was a great run. Very proud of the guys, and happy for the city to get the first World Series. So I think that a lot of the guys are getting there early. They're back working out. And I've been told there's seven or eight guys already down there working out.
I can tell you, it's always nice. One of the things that really draws us to sports is it's one thing to see great players, but great players who play great in the biggest settings and scenarios is what makes sports special. When you see guys who do things that are just special, we were able to witness a variety of players do that. George Springer in clutch situations. George Springer and Jose Altuve and Marwin Gonzalez. And there's, the list goes, Lance McCullers.
Correa.
Charlie Morton, Carlos Correa. All these guys stepping up in a variety of manners, which is going to make this, for most people, it's going to be the most incredible time in sports history the Houston Astros run, when you look at, because all those series were unique, the Red Sox series with Altuve and then the Yankee series coming back, and of course the craziness of the Dodgers series. How did you take that in as an owner? Because you didn't seem to, it had to be tearing you up inside like the rest of us, but you look pretty cool, calm, and collected back behind the plate.
Well, it was a great run. I mean, all those series were fun to watch. I mean, great baseball. The guys kept coming through over and over and over again. Listen, I was there just like another fan. There's, once a game starts, there's really nothing you can do. AJ's managing the game, and you're one of the other spectators. But it was fun to watch. I remember the game five. I was sitting back behind Hope, and don't often like to sit there too much. Because you're right there, and you're on TV every pitch, and so I'd leave when they scored. Dodgers would score a bunch of runs, and I'd come back when we scored. So I got a routine going, and we finally got it done. But what a game, So it's fun to watch. You're a fan, and when the game goes off, you just will hope for the best.
But honestly, because I talked to AJ about this, and I said you looked so cool and calm and collected, like Lance said. What was going through your mind and your gut? I mean, was it you certainly showed better than you must have felt.
Well, listen, the guys were so resilient. I remember watching a game in Boston when Bregman hit the home run to tie the game up or go ahead. I forget which was, but he went into that dugout because I was happening to be lucky enough to sit down low there, and I could look into the dugout from the stands, and he was so fired up. He just got the rest of the guys going. I mean, they never really gave up, and they never felt like they were beat, and that's a champion. That's how it works.
Yeah. One of the things that Lance said there was the clutch, and it seemed like, and it was so amazing, it didn't matter if it was Chris Sale or Kimbrel or Chapman or CeCe or all the Dodgers. I mean, it was unbelievable. Kenley Jansen. It didn't matter who was pitching. And that's something that we haven't seen here in how long, is that guys, we don't care who it is. We're going to hit you.
Yeah. No, it was fun to watch because they went through probably three of the best closers in baseball, with Boston's Clark Kimball, you mentioned, and then the big left-hander in New York, and then the Dodgers closers. Those guys really hadn't been touched all year, and they got to the Boston closer a couple times, they got to New York closer a couple times, and Jansen a couple times. And so to get through those guys and hit them and win the games late like that was pretty incredible.
I'd say it was truly incredible, and I know it was Jansen
got to all three of them.
Jansen and Kimbrell. Who was it? It was Kimbrell, and they also touched up Chris Sale. We didn't even mention that. Yeah, Sale, Kimbrell, Chapman, and Jansen, and really all the Dodgers bullpen, because they had been really good, and all the Yankees bullpen, because these guys had been great up to this point. So it's just, frankly, it's anti-Astros, because we've seen some great Astros teams in the past who fell short in clutch situations. So to see this Astros team go start to finish like that is something that will mean a lot.
And by the way, Kershaw, too.
Sale, Kershaw, Jansen.
You know, right, whatever.
I mean, one of the great clutch performances of all time has to be this Houston Astros World Series win against that many big-time home runs.
And you don't know when you're looking at guys if they've got that in them, though, right? I mean, when Jeff Luhnow is picking guys and, you know, this, we want this guy for the team, we want that guy for the team, one thing that you can't measure is if he's going to have the guts to, or another way to put it, if he's going to have the guts in and have the poise in clutch time.
Yeah, I think, you know, you've seen, you know, Bregman. I always use Bregman's example. He's the youngest of the group, and he thrives on those situations. So I think it, you know, it kind of feeds off each other. The guys get push each other. I mean, Altuve, you know, is as quiet as he is at times. He just kept pushing those guys. Marwin told me, he said, listen, I wouldn't have this great a year. He said, Altuve was on me early. He said, you can get better. You can get better. You can get better. And I think, you know, they all started feeding off of that. And sure enough, you know, all of our guys had great years.
Yeah. You know, while Beltran didn't have a great year, and, you know, he had to sit because of how he was hitting and all that stuff, I think he's going to be sorely missed. And remember that when after he was signed, and Altuve and who was it, Correa, and somebody else went out to dinner with him, and they Beltran said that they were grilling me on how they could possibly get better. And that leadership, while he wasn't great on the field, I think that certainly helped in the locker room, don't you?
Oh yeah, I mean he's a very poised guy and a really nice guy, and I had a chance to visit with him numerous times on the Puerto Rican issue, and he's just as genuine as they get, and so, you know, they really, really, you know, fed off of him, and, you know, he was always there to talk to him and console him, and, you know, he had some big hits throughout the year, though. He had a big hit. He had a big hit in Boston that helped us win a game. I mean, he didn't have a great season, but, you know, I think more than anything, he helped the rest of the guys stabilize the other guys when they had a tough time. He'd sit down and talk to them, and he was always really there to console anybody that wanted it.
Jim Crane with us in studio here on ESPN 97.5. You can tweet us at John Granato, at Lance Zerline. You can give us a call, 713-780-3776. All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5. John and Lance, along with Dell and Jim Crane, is with us in studio here on ESPN 97.5. We were talking about it earlier. 81 games, average 30,000. You get 2.4 million fans to the ballpark this year. Would you be happy with that?
Oh, yeah. I think we're estimating there'll be a little bit more than that this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should get, you know, we could, if we really get a good quick start and we're you know, outside goal is 3 million. It's only hit it once, you know. So, yeah, I think we're going to really get a lot of folks in the ballpark and want to be part of the atmosphere. And hopefully the guys will get off to a quick start and we'll keep filling the ballpark.
What did it end up last year?
Well, we had that series that got canceled. So we lost about, you know, 100,000 when we had to go to Tampa with the weather here. But I think we got close to 2.6.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
And yet there were a lot of nights, and I see Reed a lot at the ballpark, and I asked him, are you a little discouraged at some of the nights early on, especially? It's the, you know, this is a good baseball team and everybody should be excited about it and whatnot. And he goes, listen, we're not going to ever tell the fans that they need to come out here. We win and they'll come out.
Yeah, no, I think that the momentum's there this year. But, you know, that's a lot of folks. You get 30,000 a night. That's a lot of people in a ballpark. You know, and the game's early in the week. You know, during school time is tough because the games are long, you know, so the Mondays and Tuesdays. But the weekends are always, you know, I think will be very brisk this year.
Season ticket sales?
Yeah, they've gone up. I hadn't checked the last, but I think, you know, we're getting close to 20,000. So we've never been there before while I've been here. And, you know, that the fans want to be there. The good tickets are getting taken.
Let me ask you this. I don't know if it's if I'm intruding too much here, but the postseason, as I understand it, is that Major League Baseball's ticket money? How does it what, do? You, is it very profitable to win the World Series?
Yeah. I think you get when you're at home, you get your concessions and your merchandising, which we had a good run there, and then the gates are split. I mean, you saw the players get a split.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 400 and something thousand, and that was 60 shares. They vote for the guys in the locker room, and the managers, the coaches, all get a full share, and that comes straight from the gate. So the first in a 5-game series, the players get 60% of the gate. 3 games, and in the 7-game series, they get their money first. So they're going to get, and so you were working with big gates in Boston, expensive tickets, in New York, expensive tickets, L.A., the tickets are higher than ours. And so that was the highest cut for a player ever. So they get their money up front, then baseball took a little money. And then towards the end, you get to split the gate with the home team. So, those last 2 games in L.A. were big numbers. It's a big boost financially, and it adds up, and it allows you to do some things the next year.
So you were glad you had a 7-game series?
Well,
you'll
take the win any way you get it, but if we couldn't have run the tables any better from financial standpoint, because we played, except for one more game in Boston or one more home game with Boston, we'd played the max. So, yeah, you don't want to go 7 if you don't have to, but certainly it did pay.
So John and I talked about this early. When you first took over the team, it was a much different vibe because it was a team that wasn't on TV because of the Comcast deal. It was a team that was devoid of major league talent. The minor league system had been depleted, relatively speaking, was just beginning to be replenished. I remember taking calls, people who were upset that you weren't spending money on free agency or you weren't doing this or doing that. There was clearly a plan in place. It clearly worked. Was there ever a thought of deviating from the process at any point? Were you getting frustrated or nervous at the very beginning, or did you anticipate it? Did you know what you were stepping into when you took on the Astros? And
well, listen, we worked hard to put the plan together. I mean, Jeff, really the mastermind of the plan. I bought into it and stayed with it. But early on, we went under a lot of criticism, and I could see the improvements that get made. Even, the first year we took over, everything was set, so we really couldn't do much in 11. We got the team in November. All the contracts were in place, and the staff was hired. So we just took that year to assess things and start working on it. You know, when you look back a couple years into it, the fourth year we had the team, we did make the playoffs. So the last 3 years have been pretty good, over 500 in a big year. But really, every time he came up with a move, you had a hard time, second guessing it, because it was well thought out. It had good information, good data. I mean, he didn't get them all right, but he got a lot of them right. And then we always said, and I think now people believe us, but they didn't then, is when it was time to spend money, when we could really win, we would spend the money. You saw us do that this year with McCann and Carlos Beltran, Reddick. Mm-hmm. We also brought in Verlander at the end, and now you see us keep adding the pieces. So, and the economics are better now for us because, as you mentioned earlier, what people don't realize, for a year and a half, we didn't get any TV money. Comcast filed bankruptcy. They didn't pay us $111 million. So our gate was low, so we just didn't have a ton of money to spend. And if we'd have spent it, even if we wanted to lose money, we couldn't have won spending it anyway because we couldn't spend enough. So the plan worked. I mean, listen, I think you're going to see some people try to duplicate that plan. But it's not easy. And, it takes a little bit of good fortune and picking the right guys and having those guys come through. You got Carlos Correa was just a dead ringer. And, he got Bregman. That was a great pick. And so he got a lot of them right, but we missed on a few.
Mm-hmm. Did the hurricane have anything to do with you getting Justin Verlander?
We almost didn't get him because of it, because it was going on when we were trying to sign him, because I was out of town, I remember. And, he was worried about coming to the town. He thought the town was blown off the map. And so, we had to convince him that it's going to be fine. And, he was really concerned with that, and he had spent a lot of time in Houston. But I think, a couple guys pitched in and convinced him that, you know, this is a good place to be. He had a chance to win. And, you know, when he came in, he really set the tone for the rest of the guys. They were telling a story the other day that, you know, he came in and the guys that aren't pitching that day, the starters, they get treatments in the locker room during the game, you know. And so he came in and they said, well, when do you want your treatments? He says, you know, what time during the game do you want them? He says, well, I watch a game. During, you know, I don't get treatments during the game. And he says, I'll take it at 3 o'clock. And next thing you know, all the pitchers are lined up on the bench watching a game. So he set a little tone in there with the guys because of his maturity and his expertise that, you know, I think picked the guys up a little bit.
But because of the hurricane, you didn't say we need to do something for this city. Let's get Justin Verlander.
No, we were trying to get Justin, you know, at the turn and we just couldn't get the players right. And they weren't fully committed to, you know, kind of nuke the team. The young man that just took over his father, Yearly's father passed away. You know, he was unsure if he was going to disassemble the team because they still had a lot of really good players. Mm-hmm. And then once they traded up, then the game was on, and that happened a few days before when he cleared waivers, I think, or even at the turn. So, you know, then they decided to unload some of the bigger salaries, you know, and Justin cleared waivers. We weren't the first team that had a crack at him, but, you know, it was, you know, they picked up a little bit of the salary. But, you know, we were trying to get Justin the whole time.
So you were here right after the trade deadline, sitting right there, and you didn't get – Peter Angelos nixed the deal. You didn't get – you didn't make any trades. Then – disappointed Dallas came out. Reddick came out. You guys went on a losing streak. And it was – and I was feeling for Jeff because Jeff Luhnow is sitting there going, and probably going, oh, my God, look at – we're falling apart. But in large part, it happened when you didn't make any trade deadline deals. How nerve-wracking was that time for you and before you got Justin here?
Well, I mean – listen, they're always working on, you know, trying to improve the team, and some of the deals just don't make. I mean, if a team won't let go of a guy or for the right price or the right prospects or whatever the circumstances are, there's not a whole lot you can do about it. And, you know, what really causes a lot of those teams to hang on at the break at the trade deadline is they still have a chance for a wild card. You know, once you get in the wild card game, the team gets hot. You know, there's wild card teams that have won. So, you know, it's really hard sometimes. But, you know, they work hard at it. You know, we were disappointed we didn't get a deal done. But actually, had we got a couple that we were trying to do, we probably wouldn't have got Verlander. So everything worked out fine. You know, mm-hmm. It was just a little bit of luck. But, you know, he turned out to be, you know, just a spark plug. And I think, you know, the way the guy works and, you know, has been around him a little bit now, he just sets the tone for the rest of it. He'll be able to help Derek Cole a lot too, I think, you know, as he comes in and you know, younger guy, he'll teach him a few things and, you know, hopefully he'll turn out to be a good trade too.
Absolutely. It feels like there's some Roger Clemens or Andy Pettit type of veteran vibe where you come on the staff and immediately there's a respect level and guys just kind of gravitate towards that, and they show the respect. But those guys also are willing mentors as well. And I don't know, Justin Verlander fit right away. And I thought you didn't get to hear this, but John Smoltz on the broadcast, I thought, did a fantastic job of laying out, you know, because he has access to this information and these stories, how important Verlander was to the Astros, but also how important your locker room was for Verlander, because they really reignited, rejuvenated him, and they talked a lot about Dallas Keuchel's, how important Dallas Keuchel was for making this happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, Dallas helped, one of the guys helped convince him to make the move and wanted to improve the team, and, you know, Dallas was disappointed. He made a few comments on, you know, on the record, and, you know, what, and again, it wasn't because we weren't trying, it's just the deals didn't make, and so, you know, I think the way Justin works and his work ethic, he leads by example. I mean, some of these guys are great players, but like Carlos and you know, some of the veterans, McCann, they lead by example. And the guys see how hard those guys still work at the age they work. It just set the tone for the rest of the guys. So I think they saw that, you know, these veterans just bust their tail that have been around long enough, and that really lifts the rest of the team up.
And Smoltz has access, too, because he plays Floridian a lot, doesn't he, with Mike?
I actually got to play with Smoltz and Joe Buck one afternoon during, you know, the day of the second game. And I got on Buck a little bit because he's from St. Louis, and I used to caddy for his dad, Jack Buck, a little bit. And I said, you know, Joe, you got to give us some slack, man. You're leaning on all these big teams, you know, every time you do a game. You got to give us some airtime.
Thank you.
I'm a St. Louis guy, too. And, you know, that night he actually made a few good comments. So, we, you know, getting in their grill helps a little bit.
Well, yeah, and a free round of golf, you're going to come on. Yeah.
That helps, too.
Yeah. Jim Crane with us in studio here. 703-780-3776. We said we'd get you in here, so let's get Tyler in here. He wants to talk to the owner of the Astros, Jim Crane. Tyler, how are you?
Morning, fellas. How y'all doing?
Good. How are you, man?
Doing well. Yeah, I just wanted to call in. First of all, Mr. Crane, I want to say thank you for bringing a World Series to town. I'm 24 years old, and I've been an Astros fan my entire life, you know, and we finally got one. So it feels good. But also, I wanted to ask if you've ever considered buying a professional franchise before the Astros, if that's ever been, you know, a thought, or if you just woke up one day and, you know, decided the Astros were in play. Thanks for taking the call, guys.
Thank you, Tyler. You know, we had a lot of fun this year. Listen, I started trying to buy a team in like 2007, so I thought I'd had a deal with the Astros that broke up in 07. I looked at the Cubs. I was very close to trying to buy. And the teams are really hard to buy. I mean, the old commissioner had a process that, you know, might not have been exactly fair according to my standards, but you know, the teams were very difficult to buy. So I bid on the Cubs. I got to look at the Padre books. I even looked at buying a piece of the Cardinals, but I couldn't get control. That's my hometown. But eventually, the Astros came back around. We were able to do it. So I really worked on it from like 4 years, and then I finally got it done. And glad it happened here in town where I live, and you know, it's my hometown now. So yeah, it's difficult to buy. They don't trade very often, and you just saw, you know, the Marlins trade for a much bigger number than we paid, and that team's in pretty bad shape. So they're really hard to buy, and people will pay, you know, big numbers for them.
Mm-hmm. Jim Crane with us in studio here.
Did you get to see the comments? How does that sit? I don't know if you want to comment on another organization or not, but it doesn't sit well with South Floridians what Jeter is doing there, /cut. And they just, to Marlins fans, it just looks like, oh, really, just another slash and burn situation, which we've already had happen twice, and this will be the third time. But if you're Jeter, do you have any other choice but to do that?
Isn't it hard for you to criticize that?
Well, listen, I know Jerick. Actually, yeah. I saw him last week and gave him, you know, try to give them a little bit of help, because you want all the teams to do well. I mean, they're in a very difficult situation. They're not drawing. I think they will draw. And, you know, they were losing a lot of money, and the team had a ton of debt. And so and they don't have a foreign system. So really he couldn't win with those guys the way he was sitting, and he really couldn't afford to pay a lot more money. So I think his strategy is similar to ours. Of course, you know, time will tell. But I think, you know, they needed to get the payroll down and really work on the fans and build some trust. And so I think he's, you know, communicating. They may not like it. He could probably do a better job communicating and articulating exactly what the plan is, and then work with it. But he's in a tough situation. You know, they paid a big number for the team. He put a lot of his own money into the team, and I think he'll do a good job. But, you know, if he gets a good staff behind him, gets a good gets a good GM and really makes some smart decisions, I think, you know, you'll look up and they'll have a pretty good ball club soon.
Yeah. It's like you said, it's a tough situation. It was a tough situation here for 3 years. I mean, so and hey, a lot of teams are taking your route. The Philadelphia 76ers took the route. I mean, a lot of teams are taking that route. Let's build this thing back up. Okay, now though, you're not stopping. When you said we're going to keep on going, and you picked up Garrett Cole, and you know, did what it took to get him, which was and gave up a lot less than I thought you were going to give up for Garrett Cole. That was another really nice job by Jeff Luhnow. What's your rotation to start next season?
Well, look, yeah, you know, AJ will sort that out when we get down there. He's got a lot of high quality picks. I mean, it's gonna be some competition there, and you know where that sorts itself out. You pretty much got to think Verlander and Keuchel get the point, and he'll come in there somewhere in between or behind that. But, you know, you need all these – you know, if you look at all the guys we went through last year to get through the season, you need a lot of arms. And so high-quality arms at that kind of depth, we're very fortunate to have that rotation now. And, you know, there's guys in behind there that played really well last year. So we've got a lot of good starting pitching, and then we beefed up the bullpen. So we're probably in better shape this year, no doubt, than we were last year with the pitching. So we're excited about that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I would think that Verlander would be the opening day starter. He was the – you know, this, he started in the playoffs, and then, you know, if McCullers is fourth or Garrett Cole is fourth, and then who is it, Charlie Morton or is it McHugh? And then Peacock now moves to the bullpen. It's a, that, and he was maybe your best starter all year long. That's it, it's a really nice situation to be.
Be nice if playoff Charlie Morton showed up for the regular season, because people are in a lot of trouble with the Houston Astros. If that guy from Game 7 shows up, good luck.
Yeah, Charlie had a great year. I mean, he made some adjustments in his in his pitching. I mean, the guy was throwing at 97, and you know, his breaking ball was pretty much unhittable. Charlie was a hero. I mean, he played mm-hmm. great, and he played well under pressure. And, you know, that experience is going to help all these guys next year.
Does Brent Strom get enough credit?
Oh, man.
He does a heck of a job. You know, it's going to be nice to see, you know, they'll look at all of Derek's information and see what adjustments they can make on him. But I look for them to be able to give him some stuff that he may not have been seeing and change up his pitches a little bit. You know, and that's what they did with Verlander. He even said when he came in, I hadn't seen this kind of information before. It makes sense to do some of the adjustments. He started using his breaking ball a lot more, and it made his other pitches more effective. So they'll look for the tweaks, and they'll try to fine-tune the guys and make them a little bit better. And you know, we're excited about having Derek. I mean, he's a horse. He throws a lot of innings, too, so it'd be a good addition.
And you're going to get to know Justin Verlander a little bit better. You're going to play with him at the AT&T at Pebble Beach, and he's got game.
Yeah, he's a four, and he's supposedly a good player. I haven't been able to play with him yet, but we'll test him out there and see how he does under pressure.
Who's the best baseball player? Is Smoltz the best baseball player that you've played with?
Smoltz is really good. Yeah, he's probably scratch or better. You got to watch Smoltz. He can hit. He has a really good game, and you know, those golf clubs are with him all the time, so he takes them on a road. So he's always looking for a game wherever he's at.
He did that when he was pitching.
Yeah, no. I played with him a lot when he pitched. He'd go into town and find some of the better golf courses and start, you know, he'd call up and says, give me your two best guys. We'll play them with Maddox and, you know, Glavin, and all those guys would show up. So, yeah, they like to play.
Somebody asked here on Twitter, is that, are you going to play, or have you ever played with President Trump?
Have not. Not had.
President Obama.
Had Obama and Bush and both Bushes, and a lot of fun. You know, who knows? See what happens.
And Tiger has been out there with you?
Yeah, Tiger was out last week. Tiger's swinging really well. I look for Tiger to do something this year. He says his back's fine, and you know, he's hitting the ball good. And you know, I played with him last week, and he's hitting it, you know, as good as I think he's hit it in a long time. And hopefully he'll be back. It'd be great for the game if Tiger could get back in there and start winning a couple tournaments.
What's it like to tee it up at Pebble Beach in that?
It's fun. I mean, you know, you've got a lot of people watching from time to time, especially if you're playing with the celebrities. They put you in that celebrity circuit, so there's a lot of fans. But once you do it a few times, you know, and I've been lucky enough to be able to play it in a bunch, you know, it's just you just kind of have fun. If you're in a good group, the rounds are long, you know, a lot of ribbon going on, and, you know, just have a fun day and play a little golf. You get some good weather, but it's the prettiest place in the world to play. So it's the scenery is great, and you know, the camaraderie is good, and you know, they put on a great tournament. It's fun.
And you were up close and personal to see the winner.
I got close once, but it's hard to win when you don't get a lot of shots. You got to make a lot of birdies. And,
yeah.
So I think I took third one year. I got tied for first, and they came and told me two holes left, and then we made a bogey. So they jinxed me.
But you were in Jimmy Walker's group, right?
Oh, I got to play with Jimmy when he won.
Yeah.
But I've never won the Pro-Am.
No,
but
right.
Yeah. I got to walk in with Jimmy in the last group when he won and sunk the last putt and won by one. It was a lot of fun to watch.
Stay out of his way, right?
Stay out of the way. I was clearing the decks. I was hoping he'd win because I'd get blamed if he lost. He had about a 5-shot lead when we started. But, yeah, he's a great guy. And he's back. He's, you know, had Lyme's disease, and he didn't play a lot last year. But he's coming back strong.
So that's something we'll watch. He's going to be playing with Justin Verlander in that, mm-hmm. in the group. Do you know who your pro is yet?
You know, they have a draw, but you know, normally if you got a pro that requests you, sometimes they can make that arrangement. So we're working on somebody for Justin. Hopefully, we'll get him a good
pro. Oh, I'm sure that Justin will get a good. Yeah,
he'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Justin will get a good pro. I'm pretty sure. All right, let's take a break. We got another segment with Jim Crane here in studio on ESPN 97.5. Don't go anywhere. Back here on ESPN 97.5, Jim Crane in studio. Eric Sandler.
Yeah, from Culture Map. He wants to know about Potente, your restaurant, that which first year he's Culture Map's restaurant writer, food writer, and he wants to know how the restaurant business went. I mean, we know you won a World Series, big deal. How's the restaurant stuff going?
The restaurant business is tough like the baseball business. But no, when the neighborhood's changing down there. There's three new apartment buildings right there, and there wasn't a lot of restaurants down there. So we got the opportunity to put two in Marvy Fingers' building, and mainly because there wasn't a ton of places to eat around there. And so we decided to give it a try. We built them out. They're nice inside. And we're starting to get, you know, we're starting to get some attention. The Oso's more casual Italian, and then the other side, Potente, which means mighty, which I named my little boy. His nickname's Mighty because he's always growling and stuff, so I call him the Mighty One. But so it's been fun. We're the food's good. Please come by and check it out. You know, and with the ballpark being there and the neighborhood changing, you're going to see a lot more development down there. There's a lot of projects on the map and are getting back on the map. But really, there's, you know, three huge apartment buildings right there at Texas and Crawford that are all been built. One by Trammell Crow, another 37-story one that's just opening now. So that neighborhood's going to be cool down there. I think you're going to see a lot more kids living downtown and working downtown.
I don't know if a lot of people realize, but the hurricane wreaked havoc on the restaurant business, especially in that area. A lot of restaurants ended up closing doors because they couldn't afford to be down as long as they were. And then plus last year was a little tougher financially with oil and gas business. You know, it was a little bit of a down year for some restaurants. So it's been a little bit of a run. So reestablishing. But I think one of the things that really helps is having a downtown product like the Astros that make it a destination where you're not just going for the game. Maybe you're going pregame. Maybe you're going postgame as well.
Yeah, no, it's worked out. One's, like I said, one's casual, and they got nice, comfortable areas to have a drink, and the food's good, and you can get in and out pretty quick before a game or after a game. So restaurant business is not easy, but we did it more just to have a good place to go and send some of our fans, and you know a lot of players go in there to eat after the game, and you know, it's a place to be seen. So come on by.
You got to buy for them, the players.
Do they get discounts? Do they get 20% off appetizers?
It depends how well they played that night. You know, some nights we're a little more lenient, but no, we give them a discount. I mean, we just want to get them in there.
If Scott Boras comes hard after a Dallas Keuchel or Jose Altuve deal, is he going to have to pay full price whenever he goes into one of your restaurants?
You know what those guys will be making, Scott can afford full price. So we'll let him go full ticket.
Are you honestly? Are you a little nervous that Scott Boras has all of you, every single player on your roster now? Since he's so he's obviously the reputation precedes him.
Yeah, he's a very smart guy. He'll. You know, he likes to get to the owners. I let him work. You know, I kind of push him back to Jeff. And, you know, I said, listen, Jeff's making the call. When it goes over a certain number, he's got to let me know. But, he likes to work the owners. I mean, he's a smart guy. He tries to, you know, get to their egos and that sort of thing. So, you know, we've got a lot of guys with him, and he's done a good job over the years. I mean, the guys are going to get paid what they're going to get paid. You get sometimes some tension with the owners and not paying the players. And listen, we're going to pay them as much as we can and when we can pay them and try to sign as many and keep as many guys as we can. We're not going to be able to keep them all. Because we'd go bankrupt. I mean, with some of the deals that get cut, and we try to do smart deals, these long-term deals, you know, past 7 or 10 years, when you look at the math on them, I think a lot of the GMs are becoming way smarter in what they're doing. They're just not interested in signing those deals because the back end of those deals really don't work. I mean, they might work for 3 or 4 or 5 years, but you see some of that stuff at the end. And a team in the middle of the market or to the top of the, you know, top side, you know, we're probably number 10 in revenue now. We can afford to do a few of those deals like Justin Verlander, but we got to get them right. And we can't do them, you know, long term, because if one of those goes wrong, it really handcuffs the team for a period of time.
Have you been in any – you don't go to arbitration hearings?
No.
It's
no.
a you know, you still got George Springer that you got to do.
We got three left.
Yeah, three guys left. It's not a good thing to go to arbitration because you have to tell how bad the guy is while they're telling you how good he is.
Yeah, it's not a great process when you got the player sitting in the room.
No.
Listen, we try to do it in as cordial and professional manner as we can. You put the information. What's good about the process is they put their side up. We put our side up. The judge makes a decision. You're done. I mean, I wish legal matters could be that simple a lot of times. But, you know, and they're usually pretty fair. And we oftentimes will lean in and try to settle them. We don't want to put any bad blood there. But I think they understand, you know, the kind of money that's getting thrown around. The process works. So whether you like it or you don't like it, it gets people in, you know, gets them to spring training, gets the deal done, and, you know, guys are going to make plenty of money.
I don't know if you remember Dell, our producer, from the last time that you were here.
I do.
He hates baseball, and he wanted...
Nah, that's not accurate.
No, he does. And he wanted every series to be over in four games, so he was really disappointed.
I wanted the Astros to win, but I just wanted them over quickly.
Because it was baseball, and he didn't want to watch it anymore.
I mean, baseball's fine. It's just I can't do it in all season. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
So I think it's fair. 162 games. That's a lot of games by today's standards for short attention span, right? And they're not 2-hour games. They last a little while. How do you counter? So as you're sitting here, someone who grew up with baseball, we all grew up with baseball, but I have kids. Mm-hmm. And I understand when I take the kids to the Astros game, we're probably gone by the seventh inning. That's just the way it's going to be. No. How do you deal with, like, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, listen, I think the commissioner's been working on trying to reduce the time of the game. You know, you get some pushback sometimes with the players. You know, really, if you look at it, it's get the guy on the mound and throw the ball and keep the guy in the batter's box. That's where a lot of the time gets wasted, every single pitch. They stretch the games out. You're using more relievers. We've got to do something. You know, I'd love to see them put some rules in effect, and it's the history of the game and you're changing the game. But we're going to lose fans if we don't get the game times down, and so that's just the way it's going to be. But, yeah, it's a long night. It's kind of – you know, the kids can't sit. Shoot, I can't sit that long. I was jumping up and down every other inning in the game on Sunday night. It was 5.5 hours. I mean, it felt like I was there a day and a half. I mean, you know, then you've got to unwind the game. You know, they got to get the games down. I mean, there's some stuff in place. They're going to put clocks on the pitchers. Yeah, I think you've got to. Yeah, well, you just mentioned it. They used to play the games in 2 hours and 30 minutes, some games in 2 hours. That you can go with.
Pitchers operated faster.
Yeah, you got to get the guys in. You see one little subtle change where instead of throwing four balls to a guy, they just put them on first. They've got to get after it, and they got to make the changes and get the game times down.
Let's be real about it, too. You mentioned it. Getting in the box and all that, that's nice. The amount of changes and micromanaging from managers because of the data they have, the lefty on lefty, this pitcher versus this pitcher, you could see it's not unusual to see one starter and four relievers in a single game, and with more and more starters going like five innings.
What about that Dodgers series?
Dave Roberts.
That's David Lowe. Dave Roberts was just stupid.
Of course games are going to last 4+ hours when you have seven pitchers coming in a game.
Yeah, no, I mean, you saw that. You know, Dave, I think, more directed than AJ was. I mean, once a game starts, AJ's in control. If he's got a gut call or if he's, you know, he's looking at the data, don't think he isn't, because he's very bright and very smart and studies that in advance, and they've got computers in the dugout now so they can see the stuff or pull information up during the game. So, I think you've got to, you know, they're gonna use that because they're going to go with the percentages and the data. But, you know, you're going to see the games continue to use a lot of different pitchers.
You for a computerized strike zone?
I mean, certainly it's not as precise as it could be right now.
If it
gets precise, I think eventually, you know, that's another thing that's, you know, it's part of the game and the umpires, and, you know, you got an umpires union and, you know, you could still use umpires. It's not cutting anybody out. But I think, you know, the data's there. If it speeds up the game, I think eventually you're going to have to get there.
As opposed to I'm for it. Let's have a unified strike zone as opposed to this strike zone this night, this strike zone the next night. What he thinks is a strike. You got the ability, or at least close to the ability now, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, who can get that exactly right as fast as that ball's coming in? I don't care how good a vision you have. I mean, you even see it. you know, we do a lot of scouting with the, you know, this high speed video, which really lets you see the batter's release point and the way he swings the bat and the bat angle, and everything slows everything down. A bat swing takes a second. You can't tell where the guy, you can't really tell by the naked eye exactly what's wrong with a guy's swing. But when you break it down with the data we have now, you can really tell some of the flaws, or what's he doing right and what's he doing wrong. So, yeah, I think the same thing with the strike zone. Nobody can see that perfectly. You know, they can have some good umpires and they're going to miss some calls and some critical calls. It's part of the game. But getting it right, you know, with the replay has helped, but it also has taken more time to do the replays too.
Do you know that football is doing something? I think one of the most interesting things to me is I read an article that changed everything for me in terms of – I remember hearing you guys had a comment about Mark Appel and bringing him up because of some of the metrics or the data, and I for the life of me couldn't figure it out. And then I read, and it was clearly it was referencing something else, but I realized this is what was meant, was the spin rate, and there are certain ways that you guys can tell spin rate and the ability to throw breaking pitches. Everybody you guys get, Brent Strom and then plus your team, their breaking pitch gets better and better. You can rely on sliders and curveballs. Justin Verlander talked about it. Wilson football is really – they've got chips now in footballs where they're measuring spin rates and they're measuring trajectory, and this element of fine-tuning the process through data and through measurements of things like spin rate, through, you know, really through physics, I think it's very – how do you – I mean, we all love baseball growing up, the baseball we had, but now I'm really getting into the way that the sports science is really taking off, because it's really making a huge difference.
Well, when we took over, we didn't have anything. I mean, we didn't even have a data room. And the scouts were sending in pretty much manual reports. And so, you know, now we've automated and computerized it and highly, much more efficient, but we're even taking it two or three steps further, trying to get ahead and stay ahead. But yeah, the teams will catch up in that area. And so we did have a competitive advantage there for a while, but we have to keep working on it. But you're going to see more and more and more of it. I think combined with, you know, good management, you know, good people skills, you know, there's still always going to be the human element's going to be a big part of it in the way you treat people. But yeah, the data doesn't lie. It's, you know, it's right there. You can see it. You can see the spin rate. There's no secret if a guy spins a ball a lot more, and a certain pattern and a certain release point, it's going to break a lot more and it's harder to hit. So it's working. And, you know, Jeff and his team have done a great job in developing all that.
All right. Before you go, any more big moves?
I think we'll continue to look. You know, there's still a lot of free agents out there. If we can get something that would, you know, make a big improvement like a Derek Cole move, you know, clearly see that was a good move for us. There's certain guys that we won't let go in the minor league system. We're still looking to the future to keep our system deep, because we won't be able to have a team full of free agents, unlike some of the other teams on the East Coast. I won't mention names, but or on the West Coast. But, yeah, we're always looking. I mean, if something became available and I'm not going to say we're done, but we've got a pretty good ball club right now. We like where we're sitting, and but we'll constantly be monitoring what's available and what the deal might look like.
Did you hate the Giancarlo Stanton signing?
Listen, that was a tough contract. There's another 10 years on that contract, and you know, if you look at his history, he was out a lot, he was injured a lot, and he's still fairly young. I mean, that's going to be probably a good contract for a while. But I'd rather, I always said good pitching beats good hitting, you know, and so we got some pretty good pitching. So, you know, the Yankees are going to be tough next year with that bat in the lineup. But, I think you'll see some adjustments made to the way they pitch him. We certainly will. And Judd and some of their big home run hitters, we hopefully can keep them contained and get to the point where we get to play them again.
Yep. I'm pretty sure that's going to happen again. I'm pretty sure. All right, we'll let you go. We appreciate you spending time here.
Nice to be with you. We'll see you down at spring training.
Yep, we'll see you down there. That's Jim Crane, owner of your Houston Astros, right here on ESPN 97.5. Thanks for hanging with us.